Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the possibility that a bipartisan bill on immigration reform will be introduced in the Senate this week and speak with Angela Maria Kelly, Vice President for Immigration Policy and Advocacy at the Center for American Progress, who is Director of the Immigration Policy Center and prior to that was the Deputy Director of the National Immigration Forum. She's the author of a new report, which is an economic analysis on the impact of legalizing 11 million immigrants now living and working in the shadows. Then we'll look into the chances of any restrictions on criminals and the mentally ill obtaining firearms passing in the Senate, given the threat of a filibuster by Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, and Marco Rubio. William Vizard, a veteran in law enforcement who was a special agent with the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms and is the author of Shots in the Dark, Policy, Politics, and the Symbolism of Gun Control, joins us. We will discuss the impasse over gun safety with the president determined to prevent another massacre like Newtown and senators beholden to the NRA equally determined to block any gun control measures. Then finally, we'll examine the paradox that in spite of the bigotry and banning of gay marriage, gay adoption has proceeded apace and largely under the radar. Alison Gash, a professor of political science at the University of Oregon and author of the forthcoming book Below the Radar, How Silence Can Save Civil Rights, joins us. She has an article at the Washington Monthly, Under the Gaydar, How Gays Won the Rights to Raise Children Without Conservatives Even Noticing. And joining us now is Angela Maria Kelly, who's Vice President for Immigration Policy and Advocacy at the Center for American Progress, a well-known authority on the policy and the politics of immigration. She has published numerous impactful reports on the economic value of immigration reform, the costs of mass deportation, and the integration trends of Americans newcomers. Previously, she served as Director of the Immigration Policy Center, and prior to that was Deputy Director of the National Immigration Forum. She's the author of a new report released by the Center for American Progress, an economic analysis on the impact of legalizing 11 million immigrants now living and working in the shadows. Welcome to Background Briefing, Angela Maria Kelly.
Thank you so much for having me.
And there's a little bit of confusion given the senators all appearing on the Sunday morning talk shows, members of the Gang of Eight who are looking into coming up with bipartisan immigration reform. Lindsey Graham says that it's happening, the deal is done. And then you've got Marco Rubio saying, no, the deal is not done. Chuck Schumer saying the deal is close at hand. What do you make of that?
Well, it sounds like it's recess, and you've got eight members in eight different places at a time where their staff have been busily working away, and so they haven't all gotten on the same set of talking points. I don't think, though, that those differences are particularly substantial. I think it is the case that they're all moving in the right direction. They're very, very close, if not in complete agreement on a deal. And look, it's a complex issue. The immigration code is more complex than the tax code. And we're talking about a major rewrite of immigration law. And so, you know, there's going to be times where people feel like they're closer to being done than other times. But I have no doubt that particularly when they come back in a week's time and staff have bill text to present to them, that we will all be declaring unanimously that there is a bill and that it'll start being considered in the Senate.
Well, already, though, Lindsey Graham has indicated his objections to the idea of immigration reform being based upon family needs rather than economic needs. And that does seem a little callous, but I guess it does essentially lead to this meeting that's taken place between the AFL-CIO and the Chamber of Commerce about the arguments have been over future flows of immigration, how many guest workers could be allowed into the country to relieve labor shortages and in which industries and how much they would get paid. So is that, in other words, does economic interest trump moral concerns?
Well, I don't think that you have to put them in opposition of each other. It's not an either or. Family immigration has been the cornerstone of our immigration policy. The thinking being that you, if you come to this country, that you're going to want to have your closest of family members with you, your spouse, your children, your parents. And so we have a, you know, complex family visa system that, depending on the closeness of that relationship, you do or you don't have a waiting time. And in some cases, there's very long waiting periods. So it's not a system that's functioned particularly well. But it is the case that family members who come in are also themselves economic actors. They often permit the family as a unit to be stronger and to be more economically viable and vibrant than it would be otherwise. You know, a classic example is if you have your mother living with you and you have young children, that might permit the mother to go work outside the home along with the husband because there's a grandparent in the house taking care of the children. And, you know, the stories like that go on and on. So it's not a real black or white where you're either here to only work or here only as a family member. I think what Lindsey Graham wants to do, and all the senators share this, is a desire to step back and look at our overall immigration system and make some assessments about what is in the country's self-best interest, what can we do to keep ourselves as an attractive nation that people want to come to work, and to know that they can bring their family members, and how do we structure that in a way that's responsive to, you know, what's a very dynamic economy, as opposed to the static visa numbers that we have now. So that's a tall order, and it's a tall order for any policymaker, but particularly when you have, you know, four that have the letter D after their name and four that have the letter R after their name, it's unusual that you would have a bipartisan agreement on such a complex topic with clear political overtones. Yet, it seems like that's what we're getting to, and I think it's something to cheer about.
Again, I'm speaking with Angela Maria Keller, who's Vice President for Immigration Policy and Advocacy at the Center for American Progress. Previously, she served as Director of the Immigration Policy Center, and prior to that was Deputy Director of the National Immigration Forum. She's the author of a new report, An Economic Analysis on the Impact of Legalizing 11 Million Immigrants Now Living and Working in the Shadows. Now, it is unusual that the United States Senate, which has been famous for its obstruction of both appointments to the Obama administration, and they've broken new ground with Chuck Hagel, John Brennan, Senators Kathleen Sebelius and Jacob Lew had to basically thousands of written questions, even though they passed him. They're holding up a bunch of people as well from EPA and Labor Secretary's being held up at the moment, not to mention almost all of Obama's judicial nominees, particularly on the in critical Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C., where there are still four vacancies, one of which is the Chief Justice going back to 2005. So you have a dysfunction there and a kind of jihad on the part of the Republicans to deny the president his appointments and particularly to level the playing field in our judiciary, which is heavily slanted in a conservative direction as a result of Republican obstruction. So I assume that the reason that the Republicans have made an exception to their scorched earth policy here is because of the wake-up call from this last election where they realized that Latinos weren't voting for them.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that the policy and the politics are coming together nicely around this issue, unlike many issues, as you just described. I mean, certainly from a political standpoint, both parties recognize the growing clout of the Latino community and their keen attention and interest in this issue. It's very personal for Latinos. You know, two-thirds of Latinos who are voters know someone who's undocumented. A high percentage of them know somebody who has been deported, and over 10% are related to someone who's undocumented. So this isn't an esoteric, theoretical issue for Latino voters. It's a very personal one. And I really think that the last election, where you had such a stark contrast with Mitt Romney as the Republican candidate talking about self-deportation and embracing the Arizona immigration laws, saying he would veto the DREAM Act for undocumented kids. You know, it really made it easier, frankly, for Latinos to know who was in their court, particularly because the president very shrewdly in June granted deferred action or a protection for 2 years, if you will, to DREAMers, to undocumented youth. And so that, you know, that made a clear choice for Latinos, but that didn't solve the problem, right? We're not done. And so now it's a question of can the Democrats deliver and move an immigration bill? Will the Republicans oppose it, or will they get behind it and try to soften their image with this block of voters? And what will the president do? And how much of a role will he be seen as playing, you know, to advance the ball down the field? So there are a lot of different players, but all are being watched carefully by a very educated and attuned electorate in Latinos. If you watch Univision, or, you know, even if you don't speak Spanish, the topic of immigration just permeates the show because it is just such an important issue for the Latino community. From a policy perspective, there's a lot that's gone on in the last many years since Congress last looked at the immigration issue in 2007. There's been an enormous buildup at the border. There's much greater border security than we've ever had in the past. It's not perfect, and it never will be, but and that's an ongoing policy priority, of course, that we need to keep investing in. There's been a record number of people deported under President Obama. He deported more folks in just a few years than Bush did in eight. And so he is a president who has shown himself to be tough on enforcement. And I think the experiment of a lot of the state laws, the Arizonas, the Alabamas, which resulted in a lot of attention and a lot of lawsuits, but not a lot of immigrants leaving. So we still have 11 million undocumented people here without papers, and they may have moved to a friendlier state. But they're not going home the way some want them to because they are home. And I think those are just a number of reasons why the moment has come. As you pointed out, those other issues that aren't making progress, where there isn't traction and where there is this bitter partisanship, this does seem to be the one sweet spot, if you will, where lawmakers, where they don't, you know, scream at each other and kick over chairs, but they actually sit down and are drafting legislation. It's really a breath of fresh air.
Well, of course, it may indicate the extent to which, as you know, Angela Maria Kelly, there was a recent autopsy on the part of the RNC, the Republican National Committee, at why they lost and what they can do about not losing again, particularly the White House. And in many ways, it seemed like a public relations approach to a problem rather than a real change of heart. And of course, to illustrate my cynicism, the congressman from Alaska, Don Young, made the most appalling remarks the other day on talk radio in Alaska, which indicates that bigotry is still alive and well and in Republican circles.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, look, sadly, there have been a number of comments like that from lawmakers saying that we should have electric fences, likening immigrants to dogs, that we should use cattle prods, shoot them from helicopters. I mean, these are coming from the mouths of, you know, not angry teenagers, but elected officials. So there is a lot of that just extreme, unacceptable rhetoric out there. But I do think that there is a much more sober and somber center that's emerging. And a number of Republicans, look, including Rand Paul and Raul Labrador, a Tea Party darling from Idaho, of course, Senator Paul from Kentucky, talked about immigration in very personal, glowing terms just a few weeks ago. And so I think that while they're very loud, these extreme voices in the Republican Party, I don't know that they're as large as they used to be. And I think that the public generally, you know, polling is beginning to show this isn't just popular with Latinos, it's popular with everybody because, look, just, you know, like, deal with the problem. There's such exasperation at our lawmakers that can't actually pass laws anymore, and a recognition that we're not going to deport 11 million people. It's not in our interest. And as we tried to show, just from a, you know, dollars and cents perspective, it would make a lot of sense to give undocumented immigrants legal status and then citizenship. It increases our GDP. They would make more money. They would spend more money. They would pay more in taxes. And this would put extra dollars in everybody's pocketbook. And so there's a number of reasons why I think this is not going to be easy. If it were easy, it would have already been done. But I do think it's doable, and that this is probably the year for immigration to finally get settled.
So in terms of your new report at the Center for American Progress, Angela Mira Kelly, on the economic analysis on the impact of legalizing 11 million immigrants now living and working in the shadows, you just mentioned it in passing there. Give us some more details about how what is the Treasury losing now in terms of this underground labor market, and what would it gain in terms of people coming out of the shadows and paying taxes and et cetera?
Great question. So we had an economist look at the 10-year economic impact of immigration reform under three scenarios. The first scenario is that you give people who are here without papers, the 11 million, legal status and citizenship right away. The other is that you give them legal status in 2013, and then in 5 years they get citizenship. And the third scenario says that just for 10 years we'll give them just legal status, but they're not yet able to become citizens. And so it's an interesting analysis because it not only shows just the value of having legal status, but it also shows the value of being able to bump up, if you will, from having just a green card or just legal status to actual citizenship. So if we could wave a magic wand and give citizenship to all the 11 million, we would grow the GDP by an additional $1.4 trillion cumulatively over the next 10 years. Americans would earn an additional $791 billion in personal income over that same period of time. And the economy would create an average of an additional 203,000 jobs per year. So that's if we could just wave a magic wand and have citizenship happen right away, which is probably not going to be the case. If you have a five-year delay, you still have a $1.1 trillion increase in GDP. You still have $603 billion added to Americans' income. If you wait 10 years, it's still not bad. You get an increase in GDP of $832 billion. It's more modest, but it's not insignificant. And you see an increase in the incomes of Americans, $470 billion over 10 years. And these numbers are all on our report, which is at AmericanProgress.org, if your listeners want to get more details, because I'm just skimming over it. But the notion is to think very methodically and unemotionally about what's the economic impact of giving people legal status. Right now we know that about two-thirds of the undocumented have been here longer than 10 years. Most of them, I think about 7 or 8 million of them, are actual workers. The rest are children or are too old to work. But the average undocumented person is young and is employed. And we know from when there was a legalization program a long time ago now, back in 1986, the Department of Labor and other economists followed those folks very carefully, and we could see that there was an increase in wages, a significant one, and that, you know, employers invested more in their employees because they knew they were going to be sticking around, and people invested more in themselves because they knew that they weren't going to be deported. So you had a investment in education and training and just access to better jobs that you have when you have legal status, greater labor mobility, and a more efficient labor market, if you will. So we are in a time now economically that's still fragile, and we can't afford to have people either on the sidelines or getting paid under the table with employers that aren't paying taxes and employees who aren't paying taxes. So the idea is that if you do give people legal status and eventual citizenship, it will create a more efficient and robust economy.
Well, Angela Mira Kelly, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Angela Maria Kelly, who is a Vice President for Immigration Policy and Advocacy at the Center for American Progress, a well-known authority on the policy and the politics of immigration. She has published numerous impactful reports on the economic value of immigration reform, the cost of mass deportation, and the integration trends of America's newcomers. Previously, she served as Director of the Immigration Policy Center, and prior to that was Deputy Director of the National Immigration Forum. She's the author of a new report released by the Center for American Progress, An Economic Analysis on the Impact of Legalizing 11 Million Immigrants Now Living and Working in the Shadows. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about the impasse over gun safety legislation passing in the United States Senate.
There's a place where I've been told every street is paved with gold, and it's just across the border line.